falls to me to describe how Five betrayed us. How he murdered Eight, technically by accident, but only because he was actually trying to murder Nine. I was unconscious for most of the fight, so I keep the description bare bones. Just the facts, not sugarcoating anything. Then I give them the details of rescuing Eight's body from the Mogadorian encampment, and tell them about what Five did to his Mogadorian pal. When I'm finished, a grim mood settles inside the cockpit, and we ride in silence until we reach suburban D.C. I land the ship in the middle of a basketball court. We're in a fancy-ass suburban development, one made extraordinarily eerie by all its darkened windows and general emptiness. The cockpit opens for us, and Marina flashes me a relieved look as she stands up. Carefully, Nine picks up Eight's body and climbs out of the ship. Marina stays close to him, her hand on Nine's elbow, making sure that Eight doesn't get jostled too much. It's still hard to believe that's our friend in that body bag. And it feels wrong to be carrying him around so much. "Your travels are almost over," I overhear Marina whisper to Eight's body. She must feel the same as I do. Marina and I hop down to the ground and turn around to help Nine lower Eight's body. Instead of passing Eight down, Nine squints into the darkness around us.
"Whoa," he says. "There are, like, some random creatures watching us right now."
"Creatures?" I reply, looking up at him. Nine's expression has gone blank, well, blanker than usual, the way he gets when he's using his animal telepathy.
"Oh, I forgot to mention, we found some new friends."
It's John, jogging towards us from the crooked doorway of a house that looks half-smashed, like the ground tried to swallow it up but couldn't quite finish. Sam is a few steps behind him, beaming at me, although when he notices me noticing him, he quickly tones down the wattage of his smile, going for something a little less eager. Behind John and Sam, pushing a gurney, are Malcolm and a pale, lanky guy that I assume must be Adam, the dark hair hanging in his face making him look half Moog and half emo rock star.
"So many Chimerae," Nine says, nodding excitedly as he gazes out into the darkness. "That's awesome."
"We named the chubby, lazy one after you," Sam replies.
"Less awesome."
Upon reaching us, John wraps Marina in a tight hug. It's dark out, but I can see days of worry etched in the dark bags under his eyes. I remember that wide-eyed kid I found fighting Mogadorians at his high school, and wonder if John felt like that again, like he was back to being alone against the world. It should be a relief that we're reunited, but we're one less. And I know John well enough to know that he's been beating himself up over our loss for days.
"You made it," John says as he lets Marina go and hugs me next.
His voice is quiet, for me only. I didn't know what I was going to do if...
"You don't have to say anything," I reply, squeezing him back.
"We're here now. We're going to fight. We're going to win." John takes a step back from me, a relieved look briefly passing across his face, like he needed someone to tell him that. He nods to me and then walks over to the ship, taking Eight's body in his arms so that Nine can jump down. Everyone falls silent as Malcolm wheels the gurney toward me so that John can set down the body.
"The Moogs put something on him," Marina says.
She takes a lurching step towards the gurney.
"Some electrical field."
Adam takes a tentative step forward and clears his throat.
"Electrodes? Over the heart? On the temples?"
"Yes," Marina replies without looking at Adam, her eyes fixed on Eight's body bag.
"The Moogs use that to,
Adam pauses, then finishes awkwardly.
To keep specimens fresh. It won't harm the remains, just preserve them.
Specimens, Nine repeats dryly.
I'm sorry about your friend, Adam says quietly, pushing a hand through his hair. I just thought you should know.
It's all right.
Thanks, Adam, John says. He puts a hand on Marina's shoulder.
Come on.
Let's get him inside.
What?
Marina chokes up and has to take a deep breath.
What are you going to do with him?
We've set aside a quiet room inside, Malcolm replies gently. I'm not sure what customs the Lorik have for burials.
I look first at John, whose face is scrunched up in thought, then at Nine, who looks absolutely baffled.
We don't know them either, I say. I mean, when was the last time we had a chance to properly honor one of our fallen?
We can't bury him here, though, Marina says. This is a Moog place.
Malcolm nods, understanding, and touches Marina softly on the shoulder.
Do you want to help me bring him inside?
Marina nods. Together, she and Malcolm wheel 8's body back towards the sunken house. Adam follows them at a respectful distance, his hands clasped awkwardly behind his back. After a moment, Nine claps John hard on the back, breaking the tension.
So, did I mishear over the communicator, or did you send your girlfriend off on a super sexy secret mission with her ex-boyfriend?
We're fighting a war here, Nine. It's not a joke, John replies sternly. After a moment's awkward pause, a begrudging smile breaks on his face.
Also, shut up.
It's not super sexy.
What does that even mean?
Wow, you really need my guidance, Nine says. He throws his arm around John's shoulders and leads him towards the house.
Come on, I'll explain what sexy is.
I know what... Ugh, why am I even discussing this with you? John shoves Nine in frustration, but Nine just holds on tighter.
Get off me, idiot! Come on, Johnny, you need my affection now more than ever.
I roll my eyes as the guys walk towards the house, having their little bro moment. That leaves me alone with Sam, standing a few feet away, looking at me intently. I can see him trying to figure out what to say, or more likely working up the nerve to say it. The guy's probably been chewing on this moment for hours, working on his amazing speech to the girl he wasn't sure he'd ever see again.
Hey,
is what he settles on at last. Hey back, I reply, and before he can get another word out, I wrap my arms around him and kiss him hard enough that I probably knock the wind out of him. Sam seems stunned at first, but kisses back after a moment, trying to match my intensity. I grab him by the front of the shirt and pull him so that we're pressed up against the side of the skimmer. Not exactly the most romantic place in the world, but I'll take it. I grab Sam's hands and put them on my hips, then clutch the sides of his face and run my fingers up through his hair, all this desperate energy pouring out of me and into this kiss. After a couple of minutes, Sam breaks away from me, breathless.
Six. Whoa. What is going on?
The look on Sam's face isn't what I was expecting. Yes, there's flushed bewilderment, but mixed in with that surprise is an undercurrent of concern. It makes me look away.
I just really wanted to do that, I reply, telling him the truth. I didn't know if I'd get another chance.
I press my face against the side of Sam's neck and feel his heartbeat against my cheek. I've spent the last few days putting on a strong front, trying to keep it together with Marina and Nine both on the verge of falling apart. Finally, at least while we're out here in the dark, I can let myself go a little bit. Sam has me around the waist, so I sink against him. Let him hold me up and take a shuddering breath against his neck.
It can just end so quickly, I whisper, leaning back to get a look at him. I didn't want to not have done that, you know?
I don't care if it complicates things.
Me neither, Sam says.
Obviously.
We start to kiss again, this time a lot gentler, Sam's hands slowly moving up my sides.
When the wolf howls, loud, echoing nearby, my first instinct is that it's Nine spying on us from the house and making stupid noises. But then a second and third wolf make a howling chorus, and I lean back to peer at Sam.
What the hell is that? I ask.
Wolves in the suburbs?
I don't know, he starts to reply, but then his eyes widen.
The Chimerae.
They're warning us. A moment after he says it, I hear the whoop, whoop, whoop of at least three helicopters bearing down on us. If I squint, I can see their outlines approaching in the night sky. And then there are the blue flashing lights coming from the housing development's only access road. The lights are attached to a caravan of black SUVs, all of them speeding in our direction.
Chapter 15. At the sound of screeching tires and helicopter rotors, Nine and I burst back outside, leaping over the house's broken porch and onto the lawn. We're just in time to see a lightning strike slice down from the sky, courtesy of Six. It's a warning shot. The bolt erupts a piece of asphalt right in front of a black SUV that's careening up the access road, causing it to swerve.
The hell is this? Nine growls. I thought we were done with the feds.
Adam said they're supposed to leave this place alone, I reply. Some deal with the Moogs.
I guess that ended when you killed them all, huh?
There are three choppers overhead, circling like vultures. Some signal must pass between them, because they all turn on spotlights at the same time. One of them trains on me and Nine, another on the entrance of the house behind us, and a third on Six and Sam. In the bright light, I notice Sam, unarmed, quickly climbing into the skimmer for cover. Six, her hands splayed in the air, in the process of summoning some nasty weather for our uninvited guests, goes invisible before the spotlight can really get a fix on her. Meanwhile, undeterred by the lightning strike, a parade of black SUVs files up the access road, blue lights flashing beneath their windshields. They skid to a stop next to each other in a tight formation, eventually creating a blockade of bulletproof glass and shiny, dent-resistant paneling. Their doors fling open, and a bunch of agents in identical navy blue windbreakers leap out. The ones who aren't yelling into walkie-talkies have guns trained on us. All of them hunker behind their car doors for cover. It takes them less than a minute to have us pinned down in the cul-de-sac.
Do they really think this will stop us?
Nine asks as he takes a step away from the house, almost daring the agents to try shooting him.
I don't know what they're thinking, I reply. But they don't know about the Chimerae.
I can sense them lurking in the shadows just off the access road. These government guys might think they've got us surrounded, but the glowing eyes in the darkness would argue otherwise. The Chimerae hold their position, waiting for a signal. I hear a creak behind me, and half turn to find Marina on the porch, jagged icicles extending from her hands like twin daggers. That's new. Next to her, using the doorway for cover, is Adam, holding a Mogadorian blaster.
What do we do?
Marina asks. I notice storm clouds gathering overhead. Six is ready to throw down if we need to. But so far, the government guys haven't done anything except make a lot of noise. They didn't come in shooting, which is the only reason I haven't fired up my lumen. I don't want to hurt them if we don't have to, I say. But we don't have time for any bullshit. I'm damn sure not being taken in for questioning. Apparently, Nine interprets my words as encouragement to do something crazy. He strides forward and picks up the base of Dr. Anu's chair, which got sheared in half by blaster fire during this afternoon's battle.
The thing must weigh close to 200 pounds. But Nine hefts it easily with one hand, swinging it back and forth as a demonstration.
"You guys are on private property," Nine shouts, "and I don't see any warrants."
Before I can stop him, Nine flings the entire chunk into the air, putting it just inches from the nose of the nearest helicopter. It's pretty obvious from my vantage point that the chopper isn't in any real danger, but I guess the human pilot isn't used to having super strong guard chucking scrap metal at him. The pilot pulls back on his controls, and the chopper shakily gains altitude, its spotlight making erratic trails across the lawn. The chair piece comes down with a loud crash in the middle of the street.
"That was unnecessary," Adam observes from the doorway.
"Agree to disagree," Nine says.
As he bends down to pick up another piece of the chair, I hear the telltale cocking of guns from the line of SUVs. Six must hear them too, from wherever she's lurking, because a wave of fog suddenly rolls across the lawns of Ashwood Estates, making us much harder to target. I light my lumen and step forward, putting myself between Nine and the SUVs. I hold up my hands so the agents can clearly see that they're enveloped in fire.
"I don't know why you're here," I yell towards the line of cars, "but you're making a mistake. This is a fight you seriously cannot win. Smartest thing you can do is go back to your bosses and tell them there was nothing here."
To punctuate the speech, I send a telepathic command to our Chimerae. Howls ring out from the darkness on the SUV's flanks. Suddenly panicked, some of the agents start aiming their guns into the shadows, and one of the choppers uses its spotlight to begin combing the fields alongside the access road. We've got them scared.
"Last warning,"
I shout, letting a basketball-sized fireball float up from my palm.
"Jesus Christ," a woman's voice shouts from the line of cars. "Everybody stand down."
One by one, the agents at the cars lower their weapons. As they do, one of them squeezes between a pair of SUVs and walks towards us, her hands raised in surrender. Through the fog, I recognize her rigid posture and severe ponytail.
"Agent Walker, is that you?"
Next to me, Nine laughs.
"Oh, come on! You gonna try arresting us again?"
Walker grimaces as she gets closer, her sharp features more lined than I remember. She's pale, an alarming streak of gray running through her red hair. I try to remember how badly she was hurt back at Dulce Base. Could she still be feeling the effects of that? Before she can get too close, Six manifests behind Walker and grabs her by the ponytail.
"Not another step," she snarls.
Walker, eyes wide, obediently stops. Six reaches down and takes the gun off her hip, dropping it into the grass.
"I'm sorry for the commotion,"
Walker says, her voice slightly strangled thanks to the angle Six has her head at.
"My agent saw that Mogadorian ship land, and we thought you might be under attack."
I let the lumen in my hands go out, tilting my head at her. "Wait, you came rushing in here because you thought we were under attack?"
"I know you have no reason to believe me," Walker says, her voice hoarse. "But we're here to help."
Next to me, Nine scoffs. I stare hard at Walker, waiting for the punchline, or the secret signal for her men to open fire.
"Please," she says, "just hear me out."
I sigh and motion towards the house. "Bring her in," I tell Six, then turn to Nine. "If the rest of them try anything even a little suspicious..." Nine cracks his knuckles.
"Oh, I know what to do."
Six shoves Walker up the broken steps of Adam's house and through the front door. I follow a few steps behind, leaving the rest of our friends to keep an eye on the small army of government agents.
"Is that a Mogadorian I saw out there?"
Walker asks as Six pushes her into the living room.
"You have one of them prisoner?"
"He's an ally," I say. "Right now, you're the prisoner."
Understood.